Hello, dear listeners of Movie Break. Here we are again with another interview from Cannes. And this time I'm bringing you the directors of one of the competition movies. It's called Motel Destino and it was shot by Karim Aynous. Hello, it's great to have you here.
Well, thank you for the interview. It's also a pleasure to be here.
And you might know him because this is not your first time in the competition. Actually, you were just here last time and you had one of the most, at least for me, most impressive movies, Firebrand, which is a historic story. And maybe if we see your new movie, which is set in the present, it has a very neon-lit, gritty look and plays in an underclass milieu, while your historic piece played in the royalty, you couldn't imagine a greater disparity in every sense, in the sense of characters, visuality, pacing, style, soundtrack, everything. So how come?
I think that it's a privilege of coming from different cultures and access to different stories. Like, I feel that I feel like as a filmmaker, I'm more interested in being at the service of the story than sort of being at the service of the author, let's say, you know. Like, so I think every film needs a different format and needs a different rhythm, and I think the film Firebrand was a film that takes place 500 years ago. It's a film about the royal family. It's a film about the woman that is you know, in a very, very abusive relationship with her husband, who is the king, you know. So I think that there is a whole there's a whole world there which is very, very different than the world that I'm depicting now. So Motel Destino, on the other hand, it's a movie that takes place, and the last thing is, I mean, Firebrand also takes place in England, in a place which is very sort of cloudy, and it's in a castle, you know, and things are quite dark. And then I really, after I did this film, I wanted to do a film about kind of the opposite, you know, where I had sun, where I could shoot in a place, and which is a place that it's very familiar to me, that was also a film about, you know, not the royals, but like, the, as you said very well, sort of the underclass, you know? So I think it's such different worlds, you know, in the two films, but it's also very interesting how there's also, so I think for that reason, the films need to be radically different, and one film is also trying to kind of, you know, make a portrait of lady life in court at the time of the Tudors, and this one is about sort of the unconscious of somebody who is sort of a runaway. So, but the one thing that I think is very similar in the two films, and it's not something I planned, one is taking place in a castle, the one in a motel, and both are sort of kind of prisons, you know, and the past, and the characters are kind of trapped there, trying to survive and trying to sort of move forward. So I think there's something also very, very common about the two movies.
Yes, and we also have this parallel of a woman in the Motel Destino, your new movie, living in an abusive relationship with her husband, who's also kind of the king of this motel,
even though the motel is
like a shabby, you know, like one of those love hotels where people just go for a couple of hours to have like a quick tryst. And but there are some parallels, even though if they're hidden. And
yes, yeah, totally.
The story evolves around the young main protagonist who has to flee. He was involved in a assassination attempt which went just bloodily wrong, so he has to hide out. He has gangsters on his heels, potentially also the police. He hides in this shabby sex hotel. And there he also comes more and more under pressure as he develops an illicit relationship with the wife of the manager. So what struck me also was the intensity of the acting. We have a lot of sex scenes, a lot of physical scenes.
Yeah.
How did you make the decision to make all those scenes? Because, you know, it's also a challenge when the movie will be released. There's a smaller audience because of age ratings. How was it to act out those scenes, to find actors who do them, to do it on the set? Did you have intimacy counselors and stuff like that?
Yeah. No, listen, I think for me, beyond sex, the question of intimacy, for me, it's a film that's still the sort of love story, or the sort of, you know, passion story between these two characters. The one is the boy who runs away and is hiding there, and this woman who is married to the owner of the motel. So I think sexuality was a way that they communicate, and I think that's why I thought it was important to have the sex scene, is because first of all, it's a place that breeds sex, you know, so they're living in there and they're constantly being called upon, like people having, you know, shouting and having sex around them. So I think that there's something that it's in the air. Well, I think more than that, I was super interested in building that relationship, not through words, you know, but through a sort of sense of physical communion, as it's almost like if they could become one person and if they're stronger, becoming one person. So the scenes of sex are scenes where they want to sort of almost like eat each other, you know? So I think for me, that was what was behind this. And I think story-wise, I think they were very important because it is this passion that we want to, you know, that will make them want to be together, that will want to make them leave, and that will want to make them perhaps kill the husband, you know, of the of Diana, who is the lover of the young boy. But I think that on the other hand, there was an intimacy coordinator. I think there was also a very clear path physically, like when you do sex scenes, people are not having sex obviously because they're actors. So it's more like, what do the positions tell us? How did the sort of time of the scene and the internal time of the scene tell us? Is there intimacy besides the sexual act or not? So these are questions that I think working with the intimacy coordinator was really great. And I think it does feel, I never felt with this intimacy coordinator, I never felt that she was telling me how to do these things. I think she was basically existing to facilitate that the actors don't feel threatened by the director, you know, and I think the director has always this position of power that it's very easy to ask things to actors and then they'll always say yes because they are somehow trying to do the best for the film. And I think having an intimacy coordinator allows some of this conversation to exist in a way which is providing safe space for the actor. So I think it was great. And our intimacy coordinator was also somebody who was like a choreographer. And the film has about three dance scenes. And I think it was really interesting to have her do the choreography of the dance scenes, but also do the choreography of the sort of sex scenes. And I think I see this person more like as a choreographer of movement. And I need to tell what kind of movement I think it's important. But also sometimes a person who can be, you know, a place of refuge for the actors, you know.
What's also interesting is the physicality of the movie when we go beyond sex, because it looks, you almost feel the heat in this place, you almost feel how sweaty everything is, how grimy everything is.
Yeah,
the people are constantly, they feel dirty or look dirty because it's a very sandy, windy area. So if you sweat, you're just like
covered with sand, yeah.
Exactly. And how was it to shoot that? Is that actually real, or is that more a look you created, or were you actually really sweating? And then it's also the interesting thing that we have almost all scenes feel like they are artificially lit. It almost,
yes,
even the sun outside doesn't feel like real sun. It's this kind of surreal reality where everything feels like as if you tune the color palette a little too high, so that you have the sense, this hallucinogenic sense, psychedelic.
It's so interesting because I think it is, I mean, if the definition of this movie for me is sort of a fever dream, you know, like it is kind of, you know, the sensations are heightened, the colors are heightened. I think there's always a question of like excess. Everything is done too much. The colors are too much. The heat is too much, you know, and the light is artificial. And in one hand, it was for me a way to break away from a certain kind of social realism that a lot of the films from the Global South tend to go to, because I think that there's an easier way. There's a real curiosity about the Global South, right? And I think this is something that sometimes puts us in a situation where we sort of answering that question by providing snippets of reality. And I think here, I really wanted to take it to a different place, you know? I think I wanted to sort of construct a world. I wanted to have the same privilege as filmmakers from the North, you know, that they don't really need to show reality because, you know, that's not asked upon them, you know? So I think I really wanted to construct a world which was a fictional world, a world which was a world of artifice, a world which was a world that is designed not because it's subject to reality, but because it's the world of the characters. And so fantasy was for me something really important to create, narrate through color, you know, like through colored lights or something that, you know, just the elements that, you know, a genre film does normally use. And so I think it is surprising for some people to see it's very interesting because, you know, there's a movie that's very, very, very important as a reference to this film called Blood Simple, which is the first movie by the Coen brothers, you know, and there's a movie that it's very playful. There's a certain sense of like playfulness and humor. And so I wanted to come up, somehow create this world, you know, to create a world where everything is something that you actually feel, that it's not something that it's actually told, you know? So in that sense, those elements are very important. And I think that ideally, I would love my viewers to be with my characters and not looking at my characters. And I think that's also another strategy of how the camera is, why it's closer to them, and also how you talked about the word grainy and grimy, right? I think it is characters that live in a parallel. I mean, a parallel world. I mean, these are characters that are very disenfranchised, and I think it is very important to somehow be loyal to the places that these characters come from. So I think it was also a decision. But the color was also a way to build tension. You know, I think there was something about creating a suspense in the story. And I think color, I mean, it's funny because cinema noir is always using like shadows and darkness. And here is like, there's a lot of sun and there's a lot of color. So I was trying to find these elements that somehow allows us to sort of flirt with the traditional film noir, but in a different context.
And you mentioned shortly fantasy elements and also color. And the interesting thing is that we have almost like always the suggestion of a fate interplaying with characters. I mean, there's the very title, Motel Destino, where we have destiny. Then yeah. There are those little symbols and hints to the devil, to portents, to signs. The main character has a devil and like an abstract devil tattooed on his neck. We see those paintings, the rooms in the hotel are decorated by paintings who also seem like a mix of Gauguin and Francis Bacon. Very different painters, but kind of brought together. And all this always points to certain actions in the plot which are ahead, but very hard to discern from the pictures. So I also wanted to ask, like, who made those pictures that you see? Like, who has actually painted them?
Yeah. I mean, those pictures are the pictures that are supposed to have been painted by Bambina, who is a character in the film, but in real life, it was a painter that we brought.
Yeah, that is what we see, but who made them in reality?
It was a painter that we brought in, and we sort of explained to him the idea is that those paintings somehow translate, you know, sort of the emotional state overall of the main character, you know? So he's in a confused state of loss. He just lost his brother. He's a confused and fractured because he's running away. He's feel haunted by his past. So I think these are some of the elements that we provided to the painter for him to do those paintings. That's very interesting when you talk about Bacon, right? Because Bacon, it's like this
flesh
figure that are like
figures.
Completely fractured and in movement and like horrific in a way. So I think this was a big... this was a big reference for us, and it's interesting you picked up on it. So, but I think they also let us allow, and they allow us to enter his world, you know, to enter what he's feeling, to enter what he's imagining. And the question of colors are there very much as well. And there's lots of animals in those paintings, because I think it is, in one hand, it's sort of a rural space. You know, the relationship with nature is very specific. It's not like we're talking about a big urban place. And I think also, I think those animals allows us to, there's something very animalistic about making sex, right? And I think that's what makes us human. And I think bringing animals in somehow creates another level that we, as you said before, that makes the film very physical. I was really against making a movie that's based on dialogue, but that's more based on mood, that's based on fantasy, on hallucinations. I think there is a very interesting thing about this film, which is, it feels like people... It feels like the characters are very real and they're very relatable, but it's also a very artificial space.
Yeah, an interesting thing about the animals is also that they always creep in and the characters try to throw them out, and then they are again inside the motel.
Yeah,
so it's
like the
under currents of the conscience that always sneak somehow into, and no matter how much you try to repress them, to shut them out, they will come back, and you don't know how they got there, but they're just like a big cobra in the middle of your living room. They are there.
Yeah, it's true.
So, and I have the already the producer like here and the press pressing me for time. So I like to ask, after those two very different movies, what would be your next project? Like, can't possibly imagine.
Yes, my next project is a project in English language. It's been announced already that we're going to shoot. It takes place in also an artificial place. It's a city that doesn't really exist. Like, it's also in the countryside. And it's the story of a very rich family, and it how the idea of family in prison isolation is sort of falling apart. So it's kind of an it's a family saga where we tell about the explosion and the end of that structure. It's going to be shot in August, September of this year. And then, this is sort of the plot, you know. It's a very, very different film than this one, but yet it's also about this sort of domineering father and how his relationship to the family is very, very corrosive. So I think there is traces of Motel Destino and of Firebrand as well, in the sense of like making an anatomy of this very abusive or not violent kind of father figure.
So while Firebrand was a story with a very prominent actors, and this was now Motel Destino's a story with rather unknown actors, and yeah. Is the next one going to be again a big actor story?
Yes, uber stars. Because it's a story that it's very wild and it's very punk, and I think for it to have an audience interest, we really need the stars. So it is in English, and you know, we're going to have it's an ensemble of 8 actors. And you can see the internet who they are, because I can't really talk about them, but they've already been announced. So it's very exciting, because it's also a film that has, again, the same anatomy of this one. It's a house and like things that happen around the house. But this next one is more like it's a proper thriller.
Great. We can't wait to see that. I say thank you to Karim Aynous and his movie Motel Destino is running now in the Cannes competition. It does not yet have a German cinematic release, but if it gets one...
I think it will. I think it will be released in
you
November
know already
in
more
Germany,
than I...
and it will be released by P4 Media.
Ah, wonderful. So
yes.
It's just a matter of time, and you're gonna see it when exactly you read about it at Movie Break. And I say thank you and goodbye.
Thank you for the interview. It was a pleasure.
Thanks. Perfect.
No, we have I think it's a November 15th release.